Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. The recent arrest in New Orleans and the HBO documentary The Jinx have put Robert Durst back in the headlines. Mark Birkbeck was the first reporter to have access to Durst's NYPD files. His book on Durst, A Deadly Secret, was the very book found in Durst's own apartment when it was searched by police. Based on interviews with family, friends, and acquaintances of Robert Durst, law enforcement, and others involved in the case, A Deadly Secret is an odyssey of stolen IDs and multiple identities that raises questions about one of the country's most prominent families, as well as about one of its most elusive suspected killers. Matt Birkbeck is an investigative journalist and the author of The Quiet Don, Deconstructing Sammy, and A Beautiful Child. This book, A Deadly Secret, The Bizarre and Chilling Story of Robert Durst, is now being re-released by Berkeley, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Matt to the program. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
This book originally came out in 2002. And I'm curious as to, at any time during that, did you think that we would be at the point where we are now, where this man would be behind bars?
I did, but I didn't think it would be prompted by a television documentary. I think we all, those of us who followed this case closely, always felt that he would be connected, if not to one of the disappearances or murders that we know of, then there would be something else. So I'm not surprised he's back in the news. I'm just somewhat surprised that it's because he agreed to be interviewed in a documentary.
So that seems to be the big question, right? Of what was he thinking? Obviously, in the 10 years since your book came out, and plus 10 plus years when it first came out, that there's a lot of bizarre activity and a lot of bizarre behavior between then and now. So it does beg the question of what was going through his mind, and also how he was able to get away, again, allegedly, get away with all of the stuff.
Well, to answer the first question, I had met with the director, Andrew Jarecki. Known him since 2005, when we met to talk about Durst, when he first was interested. He directed a movie, a feature film called All Good Things that came out in 2010, and it was a far more favorable view of Robert Durst.
Yes.
One that showed him more to be less a, you know, alleged serial killer, to being more of a complicated figure who's beset by problems derived from his very powerful family, particularly his father. Durst saw the movie, the way it was explained to me, and liked the portrayal so much that he agreed to talk with Andrew, who was working on a documentary. So he told me in 2011 that Durst had already finished one round of interviews, and I was shocked. I got to admit, I was stunned when I heard it. But again, he thought he was going to get the same, let's call it favorable treatment that he got in the movie. And as we know now, that did not happen, particularly with the end of The Jinx.
So the fact that he read your book, that Robert Durst was interested in your book, what does that say, do you think, about him and his curiosity about his own image?
The book details, for those who saw The Jinx, you know, it was more or less a precursor, or a primer in terms of, you know, what you need to know about Durst. For those who first introduced him, it was a good primer. You know, I go into great detail. I covered this case for People magazine. I wrote about it for Reader's Digest initially. And I go into great detail, particularly in the years leading up to these new investigations, the new investigation into the disappearance of his first wife, Kathy Durst, in 1999. Prior to that, prior to the murder of Susan Berman in 2000 and prior to the murder of Morris Black in 2001, as I describe in the book, Durst was living this very bizarre life, traveling the country, living surreptitiously in different cities amongst the homeless and transients. He was stealing identities. Oftentimes, he'd be dressed as a woman. And of course, you know, as we know now, he developed, somehow he learned how to dismember a body, which is a question that still hasn't been answered, in that his Morris Black, the one victim where he's gone to trial for, you know, he admitted to killing him, though he claimed it was in self-defense. He never explained how he learned to dismember a body, which law enforcement said was done in such a way that whoever did it had done it before.
There's an aspect to this case that I want to get to in the time that we have, and that is the family itself. And because that story is fascinating to me, because they obviously, the family was quite upset by the portrayal in the film, the 2010 film that you referenced with Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst, all good things. And they were upset at that, about that movie. It certainly drew their wrath. And not only that, but they were very upset by the HBO miniseries and had attempted to block it and so forth. So what is the word now on the family and the reaction to what the jinx ultimately led to?
They're very relieved in that Durst is back behind bars. It's the one thing that they've always wanted. You know, I describe in the book when he was 10 years old, he had severe psychological problems and had gone to see a therapist, and they couldn't treat him after just a couple of sessions. And they said, if left untreated, he's going to develop what they described as a severe personality decomposition, which, as we see manifested in his adult life. They've always known that he's had issues, which is a problem with the story, in that you've got this very wealthy family, and then you've got this loose cannon running around, who's being tied into different disappearances and even murders. So they've, you know, on one hand, they've been terrified of him. On the other hand, they really haven't done much to help law enforcement. I think, though, now at the end of the day, you know, they didn't like All Good Things because of how they were portrayed, as I mentioned earlier. It was a much more favorable view of Durst, and the family was cast in an almost villainous role.
Right.
And there was some issues with facts in terms of the jinx, particularly where Durst sees his mother kill herself. The story, as I reported, is far different from what was in the jinx, where they claim, what Durst claimed, that his father actually placed him in front of a window to watch his mother jump. You know, clearly the Durst family had issues with that. He's been an embarrassment to the family. Their name's in the news every day. So I think, though, that at the end of the day, they're just happy that he's locked up.
There is a blurb on the back of the new edition of the book, and it struck me because it really is what I thought was so fascinating about the book. And the Westchester County Times says it's a startling inside look at the politics of police work. You take this case aside and the money and the power and all of that, it is a fascinating look at the work done on this case.
On the police work on it.
Yes.
Yeah, the original work by the original detective back in 1982, Mike Strzok, he did, as I described in the book, he did a lot. And that you didn't see that in the jinx. If anything, it was, you know, he was treated poorly. The problem with this story, you know, people keep asking, how does he continue to, you know, to get away with all of this? One of the biggest problems, as I describe in the book, is law enforcement, and that is how these different jurisdictions actually deal with each other, particularly with the former Westchester County District Attorney, Jeanine Pirro, who has been carrying on this narrative in the jinx and even to this day, that she was the main force behind the new investigation and that she had actually set up an interview with Susan Berman to question her before she was murdered. That never happened. None of that ever happened. In fact, Jeanine Pirro did not personally get involved in the case. She knew about it, but she really didn't get involved until after Berman was killed, and then after police actually reached out to interview her, that's when they found out that she had been murdered. Her penchant for publicity then and today has really kept other jurisdictions, led them to steer clear of her, in that they didn't want to give her any information. They didn't want to deal with her, fearing that she'd publicize what they had. That hopefully has been rectified now, in that the FBI has been involved in a very big way since 2012. And as they announced just a couple of weeks ago, they're now searching nationwide in different cities where they can identify Durst has lived, if they can connect him to any other cold cases of missing persons.
And it seems, and yes, there's much more to do here, but it seems like the case they have is pretty strong.
The one in Los Angeles appears to be pretty strong. But then again, everyone thought that the one in Galveston was a slam dunk. You know, unfortunately, that turned out the way it did, thanks to a combination of Durst having very good attorneys, the prosecutors being not very good, and then a jury that, you know, to this day people still question. You know, Los Angeles, they've been working on this for years. They've got two prosecutors that are very experienced in dealing with cold cases. I'm told they have, you know, all their ducks lined up in a row. I don't think they would have filed charges had they not had that.
Right.
So I think it's pretty strong. Does that mean it's a slam dunk and there's a conviction? No, because Durst has the wherewithal to hire the best attorneys in the land.
The name of the book is A Deadly Secret, The Bizarre and Chilling Story of Robert Durst. The Matt Birkbeck's book has been republished and is out in paperback from Penguin and from Berkeley. Matt, thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you with us. Again, the name of the book, A Deadly Secret. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.